Philip Carter is going to jump in and bring us up to speed on everything new that's coming in F sharp 5 in the release. Philip, go ahead and take it over, my man.
Yep, you said it. I am here to talk about some cool stuff all about F sharp 5. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Philip Carter. I am a program manager on the .NET Languages and Tools team, and I've been working on F sharp for the better part of about four and a half years. Been kind of driving the language through a series of releases, and this is sort of the latest one. So we've been working on F sharp 5 for about the past year or so. And I am very happy to report that we are announcing F sharp 5. It is complete. It's released. It's ready to go. And there are three primary things to look out for here. Number one is F sharp interactive is pretty much revamped here. And by revamped, I mean like it's not like fundamentally rewritten or changed or something like that. But there's some things with F sharp interactive, which has been around for a long time. People have been wanting to do specifically around loading third party packages. That's now in. Support for Jupyter notebooks and VS Code notebooks is also in. The second big bucket of things with F sharp 5 is a set of pretty highly requested features. That you know are kind of orthogonal to any particular way that you write F sharp code, but really focusing on doing some stuff that a lot of people have been asking for a long time. And then the third one is just general improved .NET interop and making things better for library authors. So at a high level, what does that mean? So first of all, there's package references for F sharp scripts. So F sharp scripting and F sharp interactive. These things just kind of go hand in hand here. You write an F sharp script, you execute an F sharp interactive. I'll show what that means in a bit. And you can now reference a NuGet package in these scripts rather than needing to like download the package yourself and find it on disk and reference it, you know, per file path, stuff like that. This plays into Jupyter Notebook support and VS Code notebooks because it's based off of the same infrastructure. Then string interpolation and name of and open declarations, which are similar to open static classes. These are three big features that people have been asking for quite a few years now that we've finally been able to incorporate. And applicative computation expressions, it's kind of a mouthful, but it helps library authors write more expressive DSLs usually for their code. Finally, there's been some improvements to .NET interop that kind of touch upon a few different areas that I'm going to show. So with that in mind, I shall demo some F-sharp goodies. I don't have really enough time to like really dive deeply into everything that I truly want to show. So I'm just going to show you some of my favorite features here. So what I have here is VS Code. This is actually VS Code Insiders. Let me just a little bit bigger. There we go. So this is VS Code Insiders, not Visual Studio Normal. VS Code Normal. The reason why is I have the .NET Interactive plugin running here, .NET Interactive Notebooks. This is still in preview, but you can install this today if you have the Insiders edition of VS Code. You just install this thing, and then you're good to go. You can immediately start writing F-sharp and C-sharp code in an interactive context, and it supports a lot of really cool stuff. One of the first things that it supports is a major F-sharp 5 feature, which is references to packages in scripts. So you'll notice here at the top of this line, this says /r/NuGet:fparsec. For those of you who don't know what fparsec is, it is a NuGet package that gives you a lot of functionality for writing parsers. So for example, this is a parser that parses out a string and tries to parse it into a float, basically. So all I'm going to do here is I have the fparsec library referenced right here, just via an open declaration. And I'm just going to hit Shift-Enter. And it's going to install the package, installed version 1.1.1. And then this function called test ran. It took in a parser, the pfloat, parser float, and it took in a string to parse. And then it parsed it into the float value 1.234. So this is great because this is what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines of code. And I have a third-party package just on my machine, ready to go. And in fact, it's not just that I have this package. I can even hover over some stuff and I can see, oh, the P float, this parses a floating point number in a decimal or hexadecimal format. This is coming directly from the package. I have tooltips and the beginnings of IntelliSense and that kind of stuff already inside of here, which is pretty cool, if I must say so myself. It's got, you know, full support for the stuff coming from F-sharp core, obviously for your own code. Let's see. Yeah, okay, IntelliSense is still, we're working on IntelliSense, it's still in preview. This thing's coming together pretty nicely, which is really great for interactive programming where you're just kind of throwing a lot of code around and trying to see how it's going to shake out. So what's interesting about fparsec is it's not really a normal NuGet package. It actually comes with two DLLs. And when you want to reference fparsec, normally you need to actually have a particular order in which you reference them. The poundr NuGet stuff knows how to handle the ordering correctly so that you don't end up in a weird situation where, you know, it won't actually load. This is something that people would run into in the past with normal F-sharp interactive that's simply not a problem anymore. Another thing that's great about poundr NuGet is it supports packages that have native dependencies. So here I have a slightly different syntax. In this case, I have a comma, which specifies a version. This is actually a much older version of the package. But what's interesting about this package is it's cross-platform, but it has native dependencies for each platform. Poundr NuGet knows how to do the right thing in this case. So I'm going to execute that cell. It said that it worked. I created a value called result. I'm going to execute that, and it gave me an object that had, you know, some stuff inside of it. So this is coming from I think it's like a modeling. It's like a numerical modeling library called Flips. So what's interesting here is, again, sort of the same situation as fparsec, except it is a package with native dependencies. And what's pretty cool here is you can see in quick info, I've hovered over this result value, and in a comment, you can actually see the evaluated result, which is something new. We don't have this in normal F-sharp tooling. This is something that we're experimenting with in notebooks, is being able to not only allow you to just, you know, get a value and execute it and see what the results look like, but you can also hover over stuff to see what the value could be. In this case right here, it just sort of shows it as a comma. And, you know, there's probably some work we do with formatting to make sure it looks really good. But this is really cool because you don't need to, you know, say you have a whole bunch of these intermediate values here and you want to see what they look like. You can actually do that without having to like break out each of these values and execute them in their own cell just to see the results. So there's a lot of interesting experimentation going on in this space, all of which is aligned with analytical and interactive programming to try to make it as awesome as possible, which is kind of one of these things that F-sharp is all about, especially F-sharp 5, where we're really trying to make interactive and analytical programming better. And one of the best environments is a notebook environment. And with that involves some additions to tooling that you wouldn't normally have in other editing environments. So one last thing that I want to briefly show this thing before I move on over to Visual Studio is I can also do inline charting. So I will open up the xplot library here, xplot.plotly. I'm going to create a series, and I'm going to have it go for x in negative... let's go 5.0 with steps of 0.1 increments to 5.0. I'm going to produce a sine of that value. And then I will go chart.line. And let's see if this works. I'll execute that. Ta-da. All right. So I have created a simple series in F-sharp just programmatically here with a list comprehension. And I'm charting that series. Looks like my chart's a little off here. I'll have to play around with this a little bit more. But more importantly, this is producing a sine wave inside of this component here, which is pretty radical. I can download this as a PNG if I want to, which is pretty cool. And you know, there's all kinds of other, you know, little stuff here because it has like a Plotly widget embedded inside of it. We are currently, this thing has probably baked in with .NET Interactive. We are moving towards this just coming in as a normal package so that you would just do something like this. You would go poundr NuGet xplot.plotly and, you know, be able to chart it in line just like that. So Anyways, that is some cool F-sharp interactive stuff inside of .NET Interactive, which is the this name of this like meta kernel that we have that loads inside of VS Code notebooks and also Jupyter notebooks. I want to switch over to Visual Studio here, where I'll also show some of the same stuff. You get NewtonSoft.json, the famous JSON parsing library in .NET. I just have a normal F-sharp script right here, and I'm just going to go NewtonSoft. I already have IntelliSense for it because it's already resolved the package. And I will go JSON convert.serializeObject. Let's do an anonymous record. Name is Philip. Age is 30, because I just turned 30 earlier this year. And I'll execute that, and ta-da, an F-sharp interactive. It resolved the package. It actually generates a little project in memory, and then it resolves against that, and it produces the value. So boom, this is already supported also in Visual Studio with Visual Studio scripting, if you like to use that as your scripting environment, with full design time support, so you can pound our NuGet any package. It has to go and download it. Sometimes there's a little bit of a lag before IntelliSense hit, because you know, hey, it has to download and resolve a package before it can actually build the IntelliSense model for it. But yeah, it all works pretty much exactly as you would expect it to. So there's a whole lot that you can do with package references. This is a really, really big feature. It's probably my personal favorite because I love experimenting with things. And this is like the ultimate experimentation tool, especially when I'm using it inside of VS Code notebooks and I can, you know, do some charting against values and stuff like that. But F-Sharp 5 is a lot more than just package references and notebooks. Interpolated strings is a big one. So I have some code over here. I'm just going to go ahead and copy and paste this. This is from a project that I have. This project has a lot of stuff in here. This is a sample project that I have. So anyways, let me clear out the screen a little bit here. So interpolated strings, string interpolations, they work pretty much exactly as you would expect them to. So here I have my name. Oh, I was 29 when I did that. Here we go. I have my name and my age. I'm going to send that to F-Sharp Interactive, and I'm going to print them out. But instead of doing sort of the old style, right, old style would look like this. I would go name, percent S, age, percent D. And we'll go name, age, apply it like an F-sharp function. You know, that would work. Instead, I can just embed these directly into the string, and I will get the same result in F-sharp Interactive that you can see down below. Turn this into this. Now, for those of you who may be being like, oh, well, but there was type safety, right? This percent S means that name has to be a string, and this percent D means that age has to be an int. And if I were to change this to 30.0, it would not be happy with that, right? It would say, hey, it's supposed to be a float, but like, you know, here you're expecting a non-float. What the heck's going on? Well, you can still get the same type safety in interpolated strings. So I can do that, and I can do that. Let's get rid of the old broke stuff. And now you can see I actually get the error diagnostics right here because I have a float, but I'm expecting an int. And if I change this to be percent %f, this should work. Need to re-execute, and there we go. I can do that. So you can have entire inline expressions, right? In this case, you know, I think that 3.0, you know, 3.14 is pretty close to pi. I can just embed those directly in there. I can actually embed a pretty complex expression if I want to, but that kind of takes things a little bit too far. If you have mismatched types inside of typed interpolation, we call them interpolated holes. If you have them inside of typed interpolated holes, then that will fail as you would expect. So you can do either these maybe like loosey-goosey interpolations if you want, where it'll basically just try to two-string the value for you, or you can be prescriptive about what the types should be. And when you do that, you can be a lot more precise about things. So moving on, another important one is name of. Again, this is something that people have been asking for quite a long time. I'm going to pull this over here. Let's pound our NuGet something fsharp.systemtext.json. Okay. Oh, whoops. That's not what I want. All right, there we go. So I pulled in a package. I'm actually referencing that package in this code. That's why I had to do that. Again, another reason why pound rget is awesome, right? This is an fsharp version of systemtext.json, if you will. So there's some cool stuff that I'm going to be doing the name of. Things first, I have a few things happening here. I have a module. I have a function that takes in a value x. I can take name of that value. I can F12. I can go to definition. This works exactly as you would expect it to work. More interesting stuff here is a method that I'm calling do name of. I have some months defined inside of a list, and then I'm going to do a lookup on the month. And if I am being passed in a value that is out of the range of expected value, I'm going to throw an invalid argument exception. So let me pass that in right here. I'll do that. And we'll try to look up the month for month 12 and month 1. That'll give me December and January, which is exactly what I'm expecting. And now I'm going to throw in an exception block where I'm going to catch that argument expression and print out the message. So if I do that, oh, that's right. Sorry, I need to send over these namespaces here. Okay. And, oh, sorry, I need to send over systemtext.json and these guys. All right, here we go. This is how you know the demo's live. Okay, there we go. The value was passed in was 12. This is actually the incorrect. This is an incorrect value that I passed in, and that is expected. You could see the full exception in F-sharp Interactive here. What's important is I took name of month itself, so I have the name of the parameter. I didn't need to do this, which of course is non-resilient to refactorings, that kind of stuff. I could just go name of month and be good to go. I can take a name of pretty much anything. I can take a name of a namespace. I can take a name of a module. I can take a name of a function. I can take a name of an operator. I can take a name of the compiled form of an operator. I can take the name of a generic value in this case. So I got C type. And if I go C of string dot type name. Oh, sorry about that. I'll have to call the code in there. Oh, that's right. I'm silly. I did not give this a didn't give it a constructor because I'm being silly. So in this case, I have a generic type. It gave me the type name of T type. It didn't give me the type of string. So the reason why that is, you'll notice this syntax is a little bit different. Name of, and then I have this brackets. That's because this is similar to the type of and type def of functions as well. When you're dealing with a generic parameter, it's a slightly different syntax, but take a name of generics. Now, for the interesting one, there's also a name of pattern that has been introduced into pattern matching. So if I send over this simplified event store API, you'll notice that I'm pattern matching on an event type, and this event type is actually a string. But instead of having to do some stringly typed stuff in each of these patterns, I can just take name of the actual name of the thing that's going to represent the string, and I can go along with that. So that's a big one for name of. Now here we got open type declarations, which is another fun thing to do. So open type declarations, you'll notice I have open type system.math going on here. Notice this is new syntax. I'm not going open system.math, I'm going open type system.math. And as we all know, system.math is a static class. I immediately have access to Py. Py comes from system.math. I can send this over to F-sharp Interactive. Boom, it just works. I have a class with a static member. I can open this class, and then I can use that static member. So what was it? It was called add. We'll just do this. We'll go add 1, 2, execute it. I have 3. So this works pretty much exactly as you would expect it. One difference between this and C-sharp is, let's say I have a module. So one difference here is if I had another class that had another static member that was called add, instead of creating an overload set and letting you pick between the two, it's going to shadow, because that's how things work in F sharp. So whenever something is brought into scope last, if it can shadow the name of the thing that came before it. Another thing that you can do is you can open type on a discriminated union inside of a module. So this is good in certain code hiding patterns where you want to have a type definition, but you want to stick it inside of a module, and you want to be able to have access to this type, but you don't want to be able to open up the entire module that's doing stuff in it. So I can actually just open that discriminated union itself, and I can print out some stuff here. I'll just print out this guy right here. I'm doing this on the fly here. All right, there we go. So I can print out the actual case. So this A right here that I'm having access to, if I F12, that takes me to definition, that brings me exactly over to the A that I've defined inside of this union type. So static classes, opening static classes is probably going to be a big thing, mostly for library authors, because you know there's certain interesting things that you can do with members, and being able to have unqualified access to these static members is just a pretty good thing overall. So let me talk about applicative computation expressions, because talking about library authors, making their lives easier, giving them more tools, applicatives is definitely a tool. So first, I have a module that I defined over the results, and I've defined a function called zip that takes two results. And in the case of them being okay, I produce a tuple of the two values. In the case of an error, I just produce an error. Okay, it's fairly straightforward. I'm now going to define what's called a result builder. And I'm going to define two methods, merge sources and bind return. Okay. Why are you unhappy? Probably because I didn't send over the module. Okay, having a little bit of fun with this demo here. Again, that's how you know it's live. Okay, moving on. What's more important here is I have access to these methods. I can create a builder, and then I can create this computation that has some specialized syntax in it. There's a let bang a equals R1 and b equals R2 and c equals R3. What's interesting about these two things right here is, these three computations inside of this result computation expression is that they're all independent from one another, right? So the computation that runs R2 and produces the value b has no relation to the computation R1, has no relation to the computation R3. Similarly, R3 has nothing to do with R2, has nothing to do with R1, and it has nothing to do with the results that were there either. This is a benefit for library authors, because you can write computation expressions that can be scheduled in such a way that these independent actions will truly run in parallel. This can be a performance improvement, and this can also enforce a certain level of correctness, where let's say I had a computation on this side and I tried to use the value of A. That would actually be disallowed, because this is what's called an applicative form rather than a monadic form. Monads allow you to define values that can depend on other values and have context in which they run. Applicatives do not allow that. It's kind of a type theory thing, but the thing that's really important with this is it allows you to be strict about what values that you're computing are in from one another. And more importantly, in the case of this applicative, and especially in the case of this result, if any one of these fails, it will not short circuit out of the result builder that I have here. It will actually accumulate all the results and allow me to use them at the end. So it works a little differently than other computation expressions. We're interested to see what library author is able to do with it. So let's see. I don't have enough time to be able to go through every single other little feature. So I will do instead of that, I will encourage you all to learn more, right? So we have plenty of good pieces of documentation. We have a blog post that dives into each of these features a lot more. I highly recommend that you check them out, ak.ms/fsharp5. This will take you to the blog post where there's a detailed write-up for every single feature that we released, in addition to some extra links to go try stuff out. And then ak.ms/fsharp-doc, that will send you to our documentation. And that's slowly being built out right now for fsharp 5. There is a what's new in fsharp 5 article right now. We're in the process of updating a lot of like the uses of printf and sprintf to use interpolated strings. And yeah, that's it. So thank you very much for attending, and I look forward to your questions.
Awesome. Thanks, Phil. Really good talk. Loved hearing everything about F-sharp and what's coming up and all the great features you get the team has been developing. Before we get to the questions, I want to remind everybody to head over to the .NET Conf swag page. Take a look at all the cool digital stuff we have there and go ahead and make sure that everybody builds their .NET bot and post that with the .NET Conf hashtags. We get those posted. Everybody likes taking a look at the cool stuff everybody's been putting together. So please keep doing that. All right. So Philip, a couple of questions. The first one I want to ask you, talk to me about some of the customers that you know that are using F-sharp and some of the great customer wins that you've had.
Yeah, there have definitely been a few over the years. Probably one of the more significant ones in the past was Jet.com. They were a startup that sold for $3 billion to Walmart, and they built a significant amount of their infrastructure with their microservices-based stuff using F-sharp. I think they were like the first unicorn that we had deploying stuff to Azure, which is pretty awesome. I've been keeping in contact with the team over at Quicken Loans. They use F-sharp for a lot of analytical tasks for like some of their financial modeling, stuff like that. So it's like pretty core to the business of Quicken Loans to, you know, do their modeling, which is pretty cool. F-sharp is long used in some other analytical domains as well. There's several financial institutions that use it. But really, there's just a smattering of all kinds of people just building web apps and building web services with F-sharp. I believe, like, for example, Lufthansa has a series of web applications written in F-sharp and using F-sharp for the front end via Fable, which is something that I would love to get into if I had more time. I believe there's going to be a community talk on day three that goes through using F-sharp for full stack web applications, and that's going to showcase some of the stuff that people have been doing out in the wild as well. At least that's what I have at the top of my head.
All right, very cool. That's a lot of good stuff. All right, let's go ahead and pop up the big board. We'll go pull some questions. First one from Daniel. Is there a way in F-sharp 5 that I can loop through the fields in a type with generics?
Loop through the fields in a type with generics. I mean, with reflection, yeah, but I mean, no, like there's, I don't think there's like that kind of, that's not really a concept that F-sharp supports.
Okay. Next one, question from Peter. Will we get IntelliSense in R for NuGet in F-sharp for the NuGet package name?
Question. That is technically possible. But it depends on the tool. So I know that Visual Studio actually does load a compressed cache of NuGet package names. It's like 10 megabytes in size or something that could be used to query IntelliSense. That's a future extension we could add to Visual Studio. However, I can't speak for other editors because they would have to still provide that data source. Now, it is entirely possible from a technical perspective for the language service itself to have an extensibility point when you're typing in that NuGet string. And in fact, we do use that today when you do pound R for something that is like an assembly on your machine in Visual Studio. So the answer is yes, it is possible. Has not been done yet, but I think that's something we might want to look at because I can definitely see why people would want to get IntelliSense for the packages that are available to them.
Cool. Makes a lot of sense. All right. Last one we're going to put up on the board. It's not really a question, but apparently Nancy wants to wish you a happy birthday, Philip. Is today your birthday? I didn't even know.
Oh, no. Today's not, it was September 28th, so September a little while 12. Ago. But yeah, wow. I was writing a lot of these samples back when I was still 29, and so I just saw offhandedly. I'm like, oh, that's right. I'm not 29 okay. anymore.
This is true. Oh, okay. Well, happy very belated birthday. I apologize we missed it.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you, Nancy.